Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of The Promise of Tomorrow.
And once again, so good to be with you. As we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, those of you listening on regular radio can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. And you'll notice numerous links there to the different things that are going on, such as the 2012 International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies going on November 13th through the 15th at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts. That's in Boston. Today's program, we've got a lot of neat stuff to cover. We got Paul Benda. He's the Director of Homeland Security Advanced Research Projects Agency at the Department of Homeland Security. He's going to tell us about what Homeland Security is looking for as far as great technologies to solve the Homeland Security problems. And also he reveals about this microbe that's going to be released into the subway system in Boston sometime this month. Now, we don't know exactly when, but we've got the latest information on that, too. And we're going to talk about the God particle that was discovered last week. And we've got a story out of Germany on solar energy and why it's costing the Germans so darn much. So, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program, and of course at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's dial up today's guest. Okay, we're really proud to have with us today Paul Benda. He's the Director of the Homeland Security Advanced Research Projects Agency. And Paul is a keynote speaker at the IEEE Homeland Security Conference going to happen on November 13th through the 15th in Waltham, Massachusetts. That's Boston, in case anybody didn't know. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Oh, thanks for having me, Colonel.
We're really fascinated by the things that that you're doing. And I see your specialty has been in protection against buildings, protection against chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosives. Is that right?
That is correct. I was at the Pentagon for a few years designing the protection systems for the Pentagon.
And is that your main... of course, a study right now is the Director of Advanced Research Projects Agency there at the Homeland Security?
It's one of them. As the director of what we call it, HSARPA, my portfolio includes both the ChemBio side, but we have to support all the missions of DHS, which includes, you know, borders and maritime security, explosives protection, cybersecurity. So we have a wide breadth of portfolio that we deal with.
Wow, you really do. I mean, there's a lot of areas we could talk about. And you mentioned border security. I happened to be talking to the head of Customs and Border Security about 6 or 8 months ago, and he said by summertime, he said, there won't be much more of a problem with border security. Do we have the border pretty well secured now, do you know?
I will leave that statement to Chief Aguilar there. I'm sure he knows it better than I do. But we're always looking for new technologies that can help our Border Patrol officers do their job better.
And what are some of the things that you specialize in?
On the border?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we're looking at, as you know, small unmanned air systems are being used commonly by DOD over in theater there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to see, are there ways that we can leverage that technology to help our Border Patrol agents? You know, one of the things we're looking at is, can we have like a tripwire that says someone's crossed the border and then auto-deploy a UAV to assess what's going on there?
Okay, so a trip bar so that you know that somebody has crossed the border and then be able to move in aerial surveillance to be able to figure out if they're drug smugglers or if they're terrorists or if they're farm workers or what. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, DOD has a lot of these hand-launched, small, you know, less than 10-pound UAVs. They got nice cameras on them, and, you know, could we launch one of these automatically from some type of slingshot as soon as we get an indication someone crossed on the border, and then they can assess who's crossed and then lead the Border Patrol agents right to them.
All right, well, these kind of tripwires that you were talking about, it's not really a tripwire. It's got to be some sort of a scanner or something of that nature. And I don't know if you can talk about it or not, but aren't these things kind of, you know, once they figure out what they're all about, they figure out ways of defeating them. So can you kind of reassure us on that?
Well, sure. You know, I don't want to get into the details of it, obviously, but we've got some pretty advanced technologies that we've worked, again, with DOD on. Where we think that we can identify everyone moving across the border and determine whether that's a person or an animal. And then the problem we've got is once we identify someone's crossed, how do we assess that? Normally we would dispatch a Border Patrol agent, but that takes a lot of time and resources. So can we assess it using, you know, in-place cameras or with these UAVs?
One time it was said that the border with Canada was actually more dangerous than the border with Mexico because it was so easy to penetrate, and Canada is sort of lax in its immigration policies and that sort of thing. Do you concur with that?
Well, the Canadian border is longer and much harder, quite frankly. It's actually more remote in many ways. There's no power. We're actually trying to develop remote power systems for our cameras. So, I mean, the Canadian border is a whole different set of challenges. Whether it's more dangerous or not, I think it's probably easier to blend in, quite frankly, because, you know, you've open desert versus, you know, tree canopy. So tracking someone in that environment is going to be a lot harder.
Okay, and so you say that the threat from Canada we citizens largely ignore, but you guys in government that are protecting our borders are taking that very, very seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually in our borders division, we have two very distinct programs, one for the southern border and then one for the northern border, and they're funded about the same, actually.
Oh, really? I mean, the equal funds going to the southern border protection as there is for the northern border protection, but the techniques in protecting the border are different. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. We hope to be able to leverage some of the things, but like I said, the remote power station, the remote relays to get the information out, you know, the northern border in many ways is harder, actually, than the southern border.
All right, these remote power stations, what do you envision? Solar? Wind, you know, there's not a whole lot of choices, batteries, I guess, and that sort of thing. And won't they be kind of vulnerable to be defeated by someone crossing the border and maybe disabling them?
Well, and you hit the nail on the head. Actually, we are looking at both solar and wind, you know, very low energy requirement turbines that can, you know, give us some wind power there. And that is a big problem on the northern border. A lot of times our sensors get shot at. And things get taken down. So, you know, how do you develop a system that's hardened enough that gives you enough time to, if someone's trying to do something to it, for you to react to it? But it's a challenge. It really is.
And the little aerial surveillance, they keep getting smaller all the time, the UAVs. But those are what probably pretty useless in the dense woods of the Canadian border, I guess, right?
Well, we're hoping not. It would seem like it's going to be a challenge. We're going to do some testing to see what level of penetration we get through the foliage, whether we can use, you know, infrared sensors that will help us see, or whether we have, you know, advanced cameras that can do image reconstruction. So, you know, that's TBD from our perspective. We've got to go out there and test it and see what can work and what can't work.
Okay, well, I don't want to spend all of our time talking about the border because there's so many other things to talk about as far as Homeland Security goes. Last year, everybody was talking about the biggest threat to Homeland Security was going to be cyber warfare. Now, it kind of looks, and I may be speaking out of school here, but it kind of looks like America is the one to fear for cyber warfare with the recent realizations that we may be the one who have actually planted that Stuxnet virus in the Iran nuclear project. So is cyber warfare still a really big worry for you guys at the Homeland Security, or what do you think is the major threat that we have to guard against this year?
Well, you know what, I think for us, cyber, not necessarily cyber warfare, you know, I leave that to our intelligence community and DOD partners, but I think, you know, being able to have a robust defensive posture for cybersecurity is important. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the interesting facts that people don't realize is that DHS S&T is actually the lead government agency for developing technologies for the .com and .gov domains. So if you think about it, you know, DoD is focused on whatever their warfare capabilities they need, defending their networks. But DHS is the prime organization that's focused on .com and .gov. And so that's our prime focus is when we look at the threats to us, you know, cyber hacking, you look at cyber criminals that are in place, identity theft, and we really think we're starting to see a strong rise in mobile platform hacking, which we think is going to be a big vulnerability for us, and what are the technologies that we can develop that will aid, you know, keep your smartphone safe.
All right, so the Department of Homeland Security is really the lead organization in protecting us from hacking on these mobile platforms. And what you're talking about a mobile platform, you're talking about phones, all right?
That's exactly right. Phones, tablets, iPads, all of that. You know, that, you know, DoD doesn't necessarily spend their money on protecting, you know, the critical infrastructure for the nation. They focus on their military missions. And so that's, you know, our limited resources are the ones that are trying to plug that gap.
What are some of the methods that you're using then? I mean, there's all this fear, you know, about our mobile devices and that sort of thing, and losing our identity theft and all these other things. Can you give us kind of a picture without giving away any state secrets?
Well, you know, you got to take it one step at a time. The internet is by nature a collaborative environment, and so we have to work with ICANN. You know, we have to work with our different international partners. We have to work with industry. One of the big successes we've had in HSARPA is the development of DNSSEC. So DNS is the domain name security, and it's a way that your computer knows where to go when you type in, like if I were to type in www.dhs.gov, that links it to an IP address, a numbered address. And we have worked with many of the commercial vendors that support the what are called the root name servers of the internet to ensure that no one can spoof that. No one can say, if I type in www.dhs.gov, I then go to, you know, Estonia. So we've actually been able to work with these different commercial entities and with the different internet organizations to put in a much more robust product called DNS Security that's actually integrated into Windows 7.
Okay, well, what about I got to ask you about tracking. I mean, right at the moment, I mean, it's like we get these scam artists and working all the time, and we mean everybody's affected by these things, and sometimes it's just a ton of this material, and there isn't. It seems like they bounce it off other people's domain names or IP addresses or something like that. We have no way of tracking it. Is tracking going to improve?
Well, that's a really hard thing that you're talking about. It's the cyber forensics. You mean if someone does something bad, do I know who did it, and can I track to that individual person? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about for sure.
Yeah, that's a really difficult thing. You know, there are capabilities I'm sure that our intelligence community has, but you know, in general, that, you know, if a really good hacker can bounce their signal off of multiple servers and make it really hard to forensically determine who did what to whom, and then attribute that act to them. You know, there are capabilities. That's not necessarily something that we look at in S&T. We're much more defensive. We're much more trying to build our systems in place so people can't hack them. And that's probably a focus, I would say, of DoD and the IC.
All right. Well, I didn't want to get out of your field too far here. A year ago, the director of security at Massport, the Massachusetts Port Authority there at Logan Airport, made the bold comment that he concurs that the internet, as we know it now, ought to be scrapped and done away with, and should be totally rebuilt. Are you a person of that school?
Well, I think it's a great idea. You know, you can build it with security built in, but it's just not feasible. You know, I think the internet's an amazing engine for prosperity that's got some challenges with us with security. Of course, you know, that security, that openness is what's been its key to growth. And so how do you balance the security with maintaining that openness is something we struggle with on a regular basis. And so we're trying to, you know, gradually build in brick by brick that security, because, you know, even if we might like to rebuild it, it's just not going to happen.
Okay. All right. Well, that's an interesting view from your perspective there at Homeland Security. Now, Let's get back to this. Some of the other stuff that you do, the protection against chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosives attacks that you've been involved in. Is that currently still a real concern?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we think the nation has developed some good capabilities against chem attacks. There's obviously room for improvement, but on the bio side. In terms of a bio attack or a terrorist attack, we know that there are people out there that are trying to develop this capability, and then our capabilities to defend against it still aren't where we'd like them to be. One of the interesting things we're doing is we're working in Boston and actually releasing a bacteria inside the Boston Metro to try and see what would be the impact of that release, where it goes, how easily we can detect it, and how can we mitigate that release.
All right, now let me clarify that. You're in Boston. You're going to release a bacteria in the city of Boston, and you're going to be able to track that drill down for me on that. That kind of knocked me off my chair here.
Yep, so sure thing, Carl. We're actually releasing in the Boston subway, and we've coordinated with the city of Boston, the mayor and the governor. We've had EPA come in and check out our materials. We had a public meeting. But we're doing a small level release. We're going to test the sensors that we've developed that can detect these types of releases, hopefully, and try and track where this release goes. So if it ever happens, we'll know how the city and how the subway system would be impacted and what's the best way to protect people against it.
Now, are there going to be people riding these subways when you release this whatever you're going to be releasing?
The plan is to release it at night when the subway is closed. But it's very similar at the Pentagon. I did multiple releases. In Boston, we're going to use a killed bacteria. It won't be alive. But when I was at the Pentagon, I did multiple releases of large multi-kilogram releases of a live bacteria, both inside and outside the Pentagon. So we're using the same material. There was no ill health effects from people. And, the idea, we have to do these types of tests because, when we get attacked, we need to know how to respond.
Okay, so you're going to figure out how this bacteria moves. You're going to harvest it, I guess, through air harvesting ducts or something in that particular matter, and then you're going to be able to identify it because it's going to be an unusual type of bacteria. But it's benign, so if there's any of it left around, it isn't going to bother anybody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The way we do this safely is it's a commercially available fungicide. They spray it literally by the ton in California. If you've eaten fruit today, you've probably eaten some of this. And so we make sure that our detectors and our lab tests can detect that specific bacteria, which isn't normally present down in the subways or in the area around here. And so that's why we can use it. But it has properties very similar to some of the bioagents we've seen some of our adversaries looking at.
Okay, so when are you going to conduct this test in Boston?
The test, I believe, is going to start in July. In July, I'd have to give you the specific dates on it.
Oh. All right. Well, before we go on, I want to insert a little editor's note here. As you can see, I wasn't real pleased with not being able to have the date of when this experiment was going, this test was going to go on in the subway systems of the city of Boston. But at the time of recording the interview, the Department of Homeland Security was still not announcing the date of the test. But if you're interested, Gideon Gill, the health and science editor for the Boston Globe, is covering the story, and you can learn more at the Boston Globe and keep track of it on what's happening there. When this interview airs, there will probably be some updates, and the Boston Globe is a very, very good source for information. In the meantime, I'll tell you what I know about this in the second half of the program, so be sure and stick around for that. Okay, back to the interview with Paul Benda, the director of the Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Agency. Tell me about some of the other things that you're doing for these. You've got a whole passel of things here you're worried about: chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosives. I mean, can we take these kind of one at a time? What's next here on the list?
So on the chemical side, we are actually partnering with our DoD friends. And trying to leverage some of the work that they're doing to develop new detection devices that can detect, traditional chem agents as well as some of what we consider the next generation chem agents.
Mm-hmm.
And the radiological and nuclear, we don't necessarily do any R&D on that in terms of detection technologies. That's done by our domestic nuclear detection partners in DHS. But we are trying to work with FEMA to in the coming fiscal year, look at how we would respond to an attack like that, and what are the tools that FEMA would need so that they could mitigate the effects of an attack if it were to occur.
All right, so...
Oh, go on.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. You were going pretty good. Why don't you finish what you were saying, and then I'll ask the question.
And then on the explosive side, we're working very closely with the Transportation Security Administration. How can we improve the passenger's experience at a checkpoint in an airport, but at the same time know that deploy detection technologies, because we've got a thinking adversary that's always trying to change and improve their capabilities. How can we make that experience better for the passenger, but improve our ability to detect those explosives? So we have several programs underway, new trace detection technologies. We're leveraging some of the technology being developed by DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, and different algorithms and different techniques so that we can improve the capabilities of our X-ray machines.
All right, so the question I was going to ask before is that you seem to be more in kind of a reactionary thing than prevention on the radiological, although the explosives, you seem to be kind of in on the prevention of that thing too. Are you heavily fortifying against, if that's the word I want to use, against explosives, but still searching for solutions for the others?
Well, you're getting now to the esoteric nature of DHS. There's something called the Safe Ports Act that actually doesn't allow S&T to do R&D on radiological and nuclear devices. And so all that work is directed by Congress to the Domestic Nuclear Detection Office. So don't take our lack of work in that as a lack of emphasis. It's just simply that my office doesn't focus on those activities.
Okay. So what's going to be the main crux of your keynote speech when we get to meet you at the IEEE Homeland Security Conference in Boston in November?
I think the main thrust is going to be a challenge to our industry partners of, in this time of tight budget environment, how can we create tools that are dual use? How can I leverage our deployed infrastructure of capabilities? An example I like to give is smoke alarms. We've got smoke alarms through every building. We've got a network in place that can detect the release of a fire. Is there any way to leverage that installed capability to do counterterrorism activities? Can I change that smoke alarm to measure not just smoke, but also maybe bioparticulate, bioattack, or chemattack? Can I create dual-use capabilities? Because we know these incidents happen very rarely, and people in this tight budget time don't necessarily have the capability to deploy a system dedicated to counterterrorism. So can I leverage the existing systems? Can I leverage the HVAC systems that are in place to mitigate against a release by simply just changing a little bit or altering it? And so that's the challenge I have to industry. How can we leverage their innovation, their capabilities, and the deployed infrastructure to be dual use?
Okay, so you're going to be looking for commercial and technology solutions to that particular question, and that right now is the main thing that you're going to be searching out. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, we have found, you know, at S&T, we develop new technologies, and the problem we've got is I might have a great technology, but if people don't have the money to buy it and use it, then it doesn't get used. Mm-hmm. And so how can I make these technologies more attractive for people to use them on a day-to-day basis, and they get a benefit of them if a terrorist attack were to occur?
So you're not talking about just government buying these things. You're talking about industry and individuals and businesses and this sort of thing being able to buy these devices to protect them on their own.
That's exactly right. Our job at DHS S&T is to protect America and save money. You know, we've got to do both of those things. And so we want to develop technologies that make DHS more efficient, and we want to develop new capabilities to protect our nation as a whole.
Okay, now you say develop technologies. Are you calling for technologies being developed by other organizations, or are you actually developing technologies on your own?
No, we're doing both, actually. We're doing both. We're looking at how can we leverage...
Okay, I need you to hold that thought for a minute while we take a break and be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
William Butler Yeats. cast a cold eye on life, on death. Horsemen, pass by.